Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know. If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners. Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
And the Mayans had a name for it as well?
Kukulkan.
And what do you think that plume serpent was?
I think it's very clear from the accounts that have survived that what he's associated with are two things in particular. One of them, he's a god of peace. He's not a war god. And the other thing that he's primarily about is giving the gifts of civilization.
The list of immortal kings recorded like tree rings are but giants, withstood the strongest winds the sky could bring. They sailed from heaven on the sealed seven, a penchant for deception, future henchmen plotted 9/11, bulbs flickered the flow slicker as society sicker, iron vigor and trigger, fake figures who figured they'd think quicker, and quicksand is how they slither when I deliver a podcast with care like a home-cooked dinner. Dine with the winners, seen as sinners to those sold down the river, ancient religions and manufactured divisions, death by 100 million incisions without volition, forced into a decision without revision, the purest renditions held for the privileged, the rest are sacrilegious, who built the village, villains who raised you in a prison, praxis precision, entrap perception to a faction, fractured prisms, eagles and serpents, the emergent emergencies converging with doomsday prophecies, blue beams, drug dreams, and neural link pulling at the seams, a war ever more ugly and raw, mankind's hell bent on shock and awe, it's all over, oils and ore, scarcity of spaces to bore, holes to the core, the earth is being treated like a whore, twerking on the dance floor, what more do I have to say to wake you from this
human beings need to know in order to move on to the next level.
The serpent is the one that enlightened us. And even when you actually look at some of Christ's words, he said, you need to be as wise as a serpent and as soft as a dove. So soft as a dove would be akin to being loving, compassionate, and kind. And being wise like a serpent is having knowledge, consciousness, right? When you look at all the other Egyptians on their headdress, there was a serpent. The Hindus, they had serpents. I think maybe Mithra also had serpent symbology, or him, Shiva, serpent symbology, Vishnu. All these characters. So The serpent has always been the one that will come and give knowledge.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And with me today, returning very shortly after his first appearance, and I think it's more than well deserved, it is the Conscious Man 7, aka Todd Cave, joining us again here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And Todd, you said you got a warm reception from my audience. I hope we can strike lightning twice, because our first episode was really fantastic and it just left me wanting more, and I want to go further into some of the details that you were spelling out for us. So before we get into that, remind the audience, maybe some people tuning into this one didn't hear your first appearance, I would recommend go back and listen to that one first. But just in case, you know, they're stubborn and they don't, give us a quick introduction to yourself and your show, and then we'll proceed with today's planned topic.
Sure. So thanks for having me again, Mark. And yes, I had some very warm messages from your followers saying that they really like the show. Some of them signed up to the Conscious Man 7 podcast as well. Follow me over there. So I'm really thankful for them for that. And so if it would be for those that haven't heard the first show, well, my name is Todd Cave and I was born in Barbados and I spent half of my life there and then the other half in the UK. Therefore, I have a bit of a mixed accent. It's very British and very Bajan at the same time. And I was a civil engineer while I was there and many things happened to me in the last 7.5 years and caused me to change gears, as I said, change profession. And now I am an online fitness trainer. So I help spiritually inclined people burn fat and build muscle. And then recently I started my own podcast called Conscious Man 7, having loads of fun doing that. And it's really something that I didn't realize was something missing inside of me to do. And I have some great guests over there as well. And we cover a lot of the topics that we're going to talk about tonight and some other things as well that I think will resonate with people, because I'm all about trying to give people options and teach, inform, and educate my brothers and sisters what's going on in the world, give them a bit of a spiritual understanding of what is really going on, because everything is not as it looks on the surface, and they have a lot of deeper meanings, which is what I tried to lift the veil on. So yeah, obviously we talk about fitness as well, because getting into shape and nutrition and that kind of stuff is also very important. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting with you tonight and going a little bit deeper into some of the stuff that we spoke about last time, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think our last conversation was a good sort of inform a practice to what you preach, because we spent some time talking about fitness and health. And I think all of that predicates these more, you know, deep, maybe mentally oriented subjects that we're going to get into. You know, the physically oriented type of stuff is really the foundation to a lot of what is possible with the mind. You know, I personally feel like my fitness experience with martial arts helped me develop tons of positive traits that then bled into and helped in other areas of my life. So yeah, I'm all about that. And I'm sure there's something to that, where once you start to take care of your health, the other parts of your life start to reflect those positive changes. So, you know, something to keep in mind for people out there who may be neglecting their physical health. Some of these topics may be easier to navigate once you square all that away. I don't know, just my 2 cents. Maybe you agree, Todd. But when it comes to ancient history, when it comes to who we are as human beings, where we're from, there is a sort of link between, you know, what we are as physical human beings and the past. You know, we have in our DNA, what, 2 strands? But I think, I don't know how sound of science this is, but esoterically speaking, I've read that there were once in the past maybe up to 12 strands of DNA. And these great beings that we talked about in our previous conversation might have either, I don't know, affected our DNA through some sort of genetic manipulation so that we were lesser than what we once were somehow, in some way, maybe physically, mentally, and spiritually, or maybe just physically, and then that had, you know, consequences in the mental and spiritual realms. But what do you think is the most important piece of evidence for that? And also, you know, how do we begin to unpack this sort of ancient genetic manipulation? Like, because I don't think that we're too far away from being able to prove this, especially given that, you know, we have a sort of established science of genealogy and DNA. There's some reason and rationale to these sorts of measurements that they do on the DNA molecular level, right? This is real science. So in some way, this might lead us to understanding some of these ancient myths and these bigger concepts. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on all that as we wade into this topic?
That's a very interesting question, because what I find is happening now to us is that a lot of the information is being realized now. And when you go back to some of these records, like you have the Sumerian Kings List. And the Sumerian Kings List, it starts with a guy called Alulin. And from memory, he ruled for like 18,600 years, right? And you have even some people ruling for 43,200 years. So what you see is that you have these eight immortal kings, as they call them, and they collectively ruled for 241,200 years. And then after the flood, and I think from memory, it was Abarretutu, he was the last king in Shubupak. And then there was the flood. And after the flood, it appears that they restarted humanity. But when you look at the Sumerian Kings List, you see that those kings, the maximum they were ruling for is like, from memory, 1500 or 1900 years, something like that. And subsequently, it became less and less and less. Now, the Sumerian tablets talk about a time of up to 450,000 years ago. So if you do the math, 241,200 from 450,000, you end up with 210,000 circa. 210,000 years ago. And what you're talking about in terms of the genealogy and the DNA strands, we know that we have 24 pairs of chromosomes inside of us. And that means that we have 48. Now, primates and humans shared about 98% of the same DNA. And all primates have a 24 strand chromosome, so basically 48. And we have 23, so we have 46. And when you look at chromosome 2 was fused together. And science is saying that this fusion of chromosome 2 is not natural. It is something that was done externally. So what we have now is circumstantial evidence now showing the reduction in the lifespan of humans that were ruling. And then science telling us about 200,000 years ago that this manipulation occurred in our genome because it is not natural. Then also in the tablets, they're telling you that they engineered humans, according to them. Then they're also saying that they de-engineered us in some ways, because what happened is that the story in the biblical story, and it's also in the Quran as well, where the fallen angels were supposed to bow to worship man because man was greater. So this story is also found in the Nag Hammadi codices and is the exact same. So what we have now is the fallen angels, which will be the Anunna gods or the Anunnaki, and they realized how great our potential was, and they de-engineered our DNA so that we wouldn't be able to live as long. Because if you think about it, the older a human lives on Earth, the wiser they tend to get. No, this is not for every single person, obviously. But what it would say is that most likely, if you are 80 years old, you're not going to be doing the same things that you're doing when you were 20 years old and making the mistakes that you made when you were 20. So imagine that you could live for 43,000 years. Imagine the level of consciousness that you would have compared to, say, 100 years. And for us, 100 years is an entire lifetime. But back in the day, comparatively speaking to someone that was living for 43,200, that is just like being a baby. That is, you're still in the crib, right? In terms of consciousness. So what you see happening in these stories and these tablets and stuff is that because we had a greater potential to surpass them, there's a tablet called the Myth of Adapa, and or the Legend of Adapa, depends on the translation. And Enki says to Adapa, I made you one of the best of us. So Enki was in the ruling pantheon of the Anuna gods, aka the Anunnaki. And he's telling Adapa that he made him to be the best of us. So what that is saying is that we look like them because we are them. It's just that we are like a subspecies because they use, according to them, a hominid species on Earth and mix their essence with that species. So you can't have a species that does not look like its creator if they are not the same, right? So what is happening now is that you're seeing, in terms of evidence, where they're telling you that they also, there's another story in the Bible where God in the Bible says, let us go and confuse man. And this story came after the incident of the Tower of Babel, because even God, quotation marks, said there's nothing that they can't achieve, right? Because they were trying to build a tower because they wanted to go to war with God, because humans started to realize, hold on a minute, we're being enslaved here, we're being taken advantage of, and they were trying to go to war with God. That's why it talked in the Bible about they would shoot arrows in the air and it would come back down with blood. Now, we don't know exactly what that allegory means, but that is that's a sign of trying to go to war, right? You're not going to be shooting arrows just for fun. So you have science telling you that this manipulation in our DNA is not natural. You're seeing the timeline in terms of the Sumerian tablets about 210,000 years ago, where there's a traumatic change in the lifespan of humans. And then you're also having stories in the Nag Hammadi and the biblical text talking about the fallen angels were basically jealous of us and they were supposed to bow to us and worship us because we would have been greater than them because they made a perfect being, both of spirit and flesh. But because now they're full of ego, they did not want to release their control system because, you know, they are, I would say, okay, I can't give a number, but let's just make it even. They're a minimum 450,000 years more advanced than us because they came here, according to them, 450,000 years ago, right? So what time it took before they can do interstellar travel and stuff, no one knows, but the absolute minimum is that they are 450,000 years older than us. So can you imagine if they came with that? So that means then, potentially, they are 900,000 years in their existence. So they would have incredible types of abilities because they would probably be like a type 4 civilization where they can bend space and time. And basically, instead of doing traveling when they physically travel, they pull time to what and space to them to be able to go through things like wormholes and stuff. So, you know, people can go and check these things, but what is for sure is that chromosome 2 is fused, because I actually physically went and looked at the sequencing myself, and it takes a while to get your head around because it looks like, you know, I mean, just strands and stuff. But once you spend enough time, you can actually see the fusion, and they capture telomeres. And telomeres are responsible for cell regeneration. So this is one of the reasons too why you find that after the age of mid-20s, you start producing things like collagen in your body at the same degree to maintain a youth, right? So all of these are things that they did in order to make us a lesser being, because they wanted to maintain their control. And it doesn't matter what religion or what group of people that you go to, the Aborigines, the Dogons, even the ancient Greeks, you have the Maya and the Papal Wu, all talk about beings that are not from this terrain, you know, this earth, coming here and creating man. All of them are saying the same thing. So while we have no 100% evidence to say, like, you know, water is wet, we have a lot of circumstantial evidence that's pointing a story that makes way more sense than what we're being told, because mainstream religion, well, Judaism, they're telling us that we're only 6,000 years old. But that's because they only track their history for 6,000 years ago. While we have tablets that are written in cuneiform that are much, much older, you know, that are showing that, you know, everything that we've been told isn't exactly how we think it is, you know?
Right. And when we start to realize that so much of what we think is known history is bits and pieces scrapped together, we realize that these stories that we're sticking to aren't, you know, locked in stone the way we once thought they were. You know, some of these pieces of information that we've been talking about were only discovered within the past 100 or 200 years after certain artifacts were uncovered and then subsequently translated. But, you know, there is still the potential that those translations could have errors. But when it comes to something like your DNA, which, you know, all human beings have, right? It's not something you can forge, and it's clearly something that has, yeah, as you put it, you know, some sort of unnatural feature that demonstrates a drastic shift from maybe what we once were. And this really plays into this whole, you know, Eden biblical narrative, right? It even maybe fits into the concepts of, you know, Atlantis, maybe not exactly the Atlantean civilization Plato was describing, but in general, an advanced old world civilization where something like genetic manipulation would have been accomplished. Then again, is that just my own materialistic modern sort of bias? You know, maybe these sorts of changes can happen on a spiritual, conscious, mental, you know, metaphysical type of level. Maybe you don't need a surgical instrument to do something like change the DNA. Maybe you can use a curse or a spell or something. But yeah, where do we go from here, starting to like unpiece this puzzle, or piece together this puzzle rather?
Well, one of the things I would say before we start to unpiece it is that the places that are mentioned in these cuneiform tablets have actually been found. So for example, there's a place called Shurupak, and Shurupak was actually found in the 1920s, I think, from memory. It was a group of German and American science archaeologists that went. So what they did is that when they were trying to excavate to find it, they found three layers of strata. And the first two strata were from previous civilizations. So the artifacts that they found were not super sophisticated. And what happened is that the last strata that they found, they had to dig about another 15 meters or about 50 feet in order to get to it. And they almost gave up. And when they found this place, the tablets that they found confirmed that that place was Shurupak, right? And according to the Sumerian tablets, Shurupak was the last main city that the Anunnaki had, and that was the city that was in existence with the power center before the flood, right? And the mere fact that they had 15 meters or so of just strata with nothing in it, no artifacts, no nothing, would also confirm that the only way that an event like that can happen, where you have strata that uninterrupted with no pottery, no animals, no nothing, would if you had a flood type event. It actually confirmed that it was Shuru Park. And the character there, Ubara Tutu, he is the father of Utanapishtim. And Utanapishtim is also known as Zayasudra in the Atrahasis, and also known as the Noah character in the biblical story, right? So in the Sumerian tablets, Enki went to Zayasudra and he told him to build a vessel to be able to survive the flood that was coming. And this story is also told in a similar way in the Epic of Gilgamesh, where Gilgamesh was on the search for immortality. And he met a character called Utanapishtim because he was looking for the tree that he could eat for immortality. And Utanapishtim, in this particular story, told him that he is from a time that is of long, long, long ago, right? And here it is now, you're finding that Utanapishtim was being talked about, and this was minimum 241,000 years ago. It's just showing you the vast space in timelines where we've had civilizations come and go, and you see, and the stories have been transferred from one civilization to the next, probably from oral texts, oral traditions, and then obviously through tablets and what's not, going from one generation to generation. Now, does that mean that all the story is 100% correct? No, we can't say that. What we do know is that we have flood stories in all of the major indigenous peoples on Earth. So, and those people are separated by mass swaths of water. So there was no real way that they could connect to do Chinese whispers, you know? So it means there would have to be something that actually took place, right? And so then the way we started to unpack all of that, we see that because now the Anunnaki had lowered the kingship from heaven, which really means the sky, they re-lowered it again, and they had to recede the population because a massive, massive amount of humans died during that flood event, because according to them, they wanted to kill humanity, because basically Enlil was just tired of humans. He just wanted to get rid of us because we were loud. He could hear us when we're having sex and talking and having fun and stuff. And he was just pissed off. So every now and then he would just send his henchmen to go and kill some of them, just cull them. And this is where you end up. My theory is that this is where you end up having so many wars on Earth, because it's just a culling process to get rid of so many humans because they're fed up, you know? And to talk about, like, when you talk about in vitro genetic manipulation, these tablets, they talk about clonation. They talk about chimeras. They talk about mixing their essence with the DNA of the hominid species that existed before. This is not like me coming up with this. This is what they are saying. So the author of these tablets, or authors, I think is you'll have to actually give them some credit, because first and first, cuneiform tablets are very difficult to make in terms of time it would take to write and then preserve them. And then also the information on there, they're talking about they used to have sex with one another, drink beer. They were in a laboratory making humans, you know. So the first Homo sapiens was created by them. And they're talking about, you know, different experiments they did. So they had plant-animal hybrids, animal and human hybrids. So all of the Centauri, for example, when the Greek mythology, is quite possible existed, because they're talking about half man, half animal, right? So I would say that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that if they, according to them, genetically modified an existing species to create us, Then what happened is that when they realized that we were becoming too smart, they designed certain things to keep us down. The introduction of things like religion, which, like I said in the last show, comes from the Latin word relegare, which means to hold and to bind and to thwart forward progress of. So then now you introduce like government. Government really means mind control, because the Latin is governe, which means to control. And then mensis is Latin for mind, and basically means mind control. Then they introduce things like money. So they put us on a system now where it's basically a false value system, where you have to go out there and physically work to produce in order to eat, when the earth is actually so plentiful in what it can produce. And basically things should, in reality, should be free. And what really should happen is that people would be doing vocations, things that they just love to do, and not worrying about money. Because in reality, this whole concept of money is only in a type zero civilization, which we are. When you go to a type one civilization, you don't need to worry about money, because the only reason why money has any relevance is because of energy. So if you take away the need for petroleum for energy, and you put in free energy, zero point energy, it means then you have an entire consciousness shift, because suddenly now you don't have to worry about your lights and water coming into your house and internet, because you would have the type of technology that Tesla was trying to do for the internet, whereas low frequency bands for the internet to send and communicate via messages. So all of these are things now that would level up our consciousness, but have been deliberately suppressed so that it would keep us in a state of lack and a state of fear, because we have what we call poverty complex. So what that means is that if we believe that if we don't go there and do a job that we don't like, that means that we would never be able to live. And then what happens is that most of us do jobs that we actually, one, don't like, two, don't want to do, or three, don't pay us the money that we think we deserve. And what we do is we spend, because if you think about it, 24 hours in a day, most people would sleep 8 hours. So that's 1/3 of your entire day gone. Then I would say now people are probably working between 10 and 12 hours. So let's be generous and call it 10. So 10 and 8 is 18. So you have 6 hours left. So most people, I would say, they commute minimum 1 hour both ways. So that's 2 hours. So that's left with 4 hours in a day. So then for those that have families or want to do an extracurricular activity like going to the gym or swimming or badminton or whatever, that's another hour and a half in terms of going, getting changed, playing, having a shower, coming back. Then you have to look at the whole thing about doing food. So by the time you finished, you probably only have like 1.5 hours left. And then look what they do. They make us get addicted to screens. So we spend that maybe 1.5 hours in front of a TV, which is an oblong box in the corner of a room, trying to tell us what to believe is real, right? So what it is now is that humans are not even able to do any self-development, do any reflection, think about how they can improve themselves. So the system has been designed to actually keep us down mentally, spiritually, and physically, because the food that we are eating is terrible food. It's all GMO. It's all full of pesticides. It's inorganic. So what does that do? It lowers your energy frequency and vibration at the same time. So then now you start to think, well, I can't get out of this situation. So those thoughts now keep being propelled. So you end up creating a feedback loop. So your thoughts are, you're saying, well, I can't get out of this situation, I'm no good. Then you start to believe it, you start to feel it. Then that creates more thoughts of negativity, creating this feedback loop, and it never stops. And all of this has been designed by these beings that came here to extract resources and created this slave system, right? And what it is now is that it's our duty to push back and to say no. But the thing is that it requires sacrifice. It requires Went to the gym and getting in shape. It requires reading books. It requires doing things like meditation. It requires cutting out negative people out of your life. It requires maybe leaving a particular country if it's too authoritarian. You know, it requires a sacrifice and investment in oneself. But the problem is now is that because we are such low frequency, we don't even believe that we can do it. So we just accept what is there. And this is an entire system that has been created by these Anuna gods, and they, through their bloodlines, like the central bankers, the aristocrats, the monarchies, heads of state, they're all in it. And basically what it is now is that it's not leaving humans empowered. So this is why, like, I try to explain to people that it's more than what it really seems on the surface. You know, there's two sets of, like, consciousness battling. You have the serpent consciousness and the ego consciousness. And the ego consciousness in antiquity was always a warring consciousness. And if you look at all the countries that have symbology, either a crest or their flag or their coat of arms, with eagles, they're always warring, always.
Let's get into this, because this was something you brought up last time we spoke. And I'm curious, because you mentioned just before how, you know, the warring is like almost like a slow depopulation, or maybe like at any time they want to, you know, create a certain effect, they'll cause these sorts of battles. So is this, you know, a la Shakespeare, the whole world's a stage and it's serpent versus eagle, but behind the scenes they're both kind of like, yeah, good fight, we'll see you on the battlefield next week. Like, is that kind of what we're suggesting here, or are we dealing with, like, maybe ideological opposites to, you know, groups who have maybe a different approach to rulership over the earth, and they've kind of, you know, vied for power, essentially, and we're all just kind of bystanders and collateral damage? Is that kind of maybe a more accurate interpretation, or is it truly just, you know, just stagecraft?
It appears to be a combination of both, because what we do have for sure is that when you go back to these ancient texts, you see two factions for sure. So you have the Enki faction and the Enlil faction. Now, everyone in the Enki faction are not all good, because you have Marduk, who's Enki's son, and he is more, I would say, inclined to be Apollo, inclined to be Baal, Bel, Amun-Ra. And he was always very warring, and he basically wanted the throne for himself. So he went to war with the Anuna gods. And then you have on the other side, and the reason why Marduk was like this is because he always felt aggrieved because Enki is the firstborn son of Anu. And according to Anunnaki rules, the crown prince would be from the half-sister of the king. So this is where you find all these royal families were intermarrying with their cousins all the time. And it came from there. Because in the Middle Ages, you had very high levels of retardation, because they were trying to keep everything in the bloodline. And what people don't even realize is that they have kings of Norway, they have monarchy in Norway, monarchy in Sweden, Denmark, you know what I mean? There are monarchies all over. Even Morocco has a monarchy. All of these people trace back their bloodlines to the Anuna gods and their progenitors. Now, you have the other side as well now. So Enlil is the second son of Anu, but he is of full royal blood, because it was from Anu's half-sister. So what it is now is that Enki, although he was the firstborn, he was not going to be the crown prince. And he always felt a kind of way because of that. So him and his brother were always like tit for tat, trying to end the other one and get it better on and trick the other one, etc., etc. Marduk Enki's son took that to a whole new level, where he just was like, you know what, screw you, dad. I want it all for myself. Screw you, Enlil. I want to be the man. I want to be the boss. I want to be ruler. And this is where, like, the Babylonian version of the Enuma Elish, Marduk changes Enlil's name to his name. So according to the original tablets, Enlil is the one that went to war with Tiamat, which is sort of like a cosmic battle, where when, and in that time, they used to call it Nibiru. They say Nibiru went to war with Tiamat, and that is what created the hammer bracelet with the collision, also known as the asteroid belt. And then the Earth became the leftovers of when Tiamat was destroyed. And what you have now then is that you have another brother or another son called Ningishida. Ningishida was more, is like Thoth, Hermes, Kukulkan, Quetzalcoatl, etc. And there's even some information showing that he's probably Buddha as well. So anyway, he was inside of the Enki faction that had more of a spiritual high level of consciousness, where he was trying to actually help humanity, help give consciousness and to teach. And Enki sanctioned all of that. So this is why one of Enki's symbols is the serpent. And he's mostly known in the Genesis story, where it said that the serpent tricked Eve into eating the apple from the tree of knowledge, so he would know the difference between good and evil. But there's a bit of allegory there, because that tree of good and evil is a false tree, because it is what creates duality. And if you look at the Caduceus, you'll see the two twisted serpents. Well, you can even see on my shirt, which is one of the inspirations for the logo for my podcast. You see the twisted serpents going around the Caduceus staff, and then you have on the top the wings for illumination. And the allegory for that is that you need to go through the middle and not take sides in order to illuminate, right? Because on one side, because if you have the serpents twisting, intertwining like that, on one side will be good, the next side will be bad. That means that the Enki faction on one time would be good, and then another time be bad. Enlil faction would be good one time and then be bad, because there are tablets where Enlil has actually done good things and lowered consciousness and helped humanity. And then there are other times where he's just this schizophrenic being, where he's just like, just go and kill them, cause droughts, you know what I mean? Just drive them out from their land. And he is more akin to Yahweh Jehovah, you know? So what you have now is that the serpent in antiquity was always a symbol of consciousness. This is why you have Enki giving Eve consciousness and telling her that the God in Eden is not the creator of all things. This story is clarified in the Book of Jasher, which is also called the Book of Righteousness. And Adam is telling his son Seth the story that Eve, Seth's mother, told him. And he said that your mother is who gave me consciousness. Now, they know when you are. So because of the serpent being the giver of consciousness, this is the reason why there's been a systematic campaign to twist the meaning of the serpent to make it bad. This is why in biblical texts, you have the serpent being, quotation marks, the devil. But this is the thing. The serpent, actually, when you look at the other texts, the serpent is the one that enlightened us. And even when you actually look at some of Christ's words, he says, you need to be as wise as a serpent and as soft as a dove. So soft as a dove would be akin to being loving, compassionate, and kind, and being why, like a serpent, is having knowledge, consciousness, right? When you look at all the other Egyptians on their headdress, there was a serpent. The Hindus, they had serpents. I think from memory, Mithra also had serpent symbology on him. Shiva, serpent symbology, Vishnu, all these characters. So the serpent has always been the one that will come and give knowledge. Now, the thing is that what is a bit complicated is that because Enki, that's not his main symbol, and Thoth, Ningishida, took that symbol after he left Egypt and he went to Mesoamerica, and that became his monitor. But then when you look back at all of the, because look at Enlil, he was called Lord of Air or Lord of Command, and his symbology was the eagle. So this is where you have some of his sons like Ninurta, Nanasin, who is also the god Allah for the Muslims. This is why they are very warring people. There is a warring faction because the eagle dominates. And even if you look at it now, the eagle is the king of the air. Still, because you have eagles that have wingspans of up to 12 feet, right? That can actually take up some of these mountain, the ibex, which are the mountain goats. You know, it's like the cubs, not the lamb, sorry. A falcon, an eagle, I think one of a balded eagle or something like that, like huge, huge.
Yeah, the great eagle is like the general name for it, but that is very large and preys on, as you're saying, you know, fully grown sometimes goats and other ungulates. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is our ad break. Real quick, we want to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, the number one hit kit, the best way to stay lit wherever you are. Your lighter is going to be right where you left it, in the hit kit next to whatever you're smoking on. Use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. Go to the hit kit on Instagram or hitkit.us and check out the brand new 3D printed models. And if you own a smoke shop or have some sort of retail outlet where you can sell smoking paraphernalia or maybe even camping paraphernalia or any type of paraphernalia that might require a lighter, check out the Hit Kit. They're now ready to do bulk orders. So use that promo code CRAZY on wholesale orders too and get a big discount. Of course, we've got BrainSupreme.co, and I am very excited to announce that BrainSupreme.co is now prepared with a full-fledged microdosing course. And this is high-level stuff here, folks, okay? Adam Schell, he's been a guest on the show before. There's a free download from the website, and it's a great tool for you if you're curious in microdosing. And it links straight up to the affiliate code. Use the promo code CRAZY, CRAZY15 at checkout with Brain Supreme, the number one way to change your perspective on life. I think microdosing is a great, safe way to really just break through writer's block or bring another level of focus to your workout, to your day job. Maybe you're high intensity, creative type, or you're crunching numbers. Who knows? Maybe microdosing can be the ticket to a higher, more elevated experience. And of course, we've got the newest sponsor, Raw Optics. Check out Raw Optics. They've got a really cool lineup of frames, and the lenses are designed to block out all this harmful blue light that we are interacting with on a daily basis. They've got yellow lenses for the daytime and red lenses for as you wind down and your day comes to a close. So go and check out Raw Optics. That's raoptics.com/crazy. Crazy Optics, that is. raoptics.com/crazy optics, and you'll get a discount on your lenses, your frames, and you'll be supporting the show. So with that, we'll be right back to the podcast after a quick break to our dynamic ads, and make sure you sign up to the Patreon or the Substack to get every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast ad-free and interruption-free. You get a premium RSS feed that you can plug into wherever you're already listening to the podcast, so it's no sweat. Just do it. It's easy, and you help keep me going. And maybe eventually we'll get to the point where we don't have to use any ads at all, and the freeloaders will just keep on freeloading because we'll have so many people supporting us here on the show. But anyways, that's the goal. We'll be right back to this interview with Todd Cave after a quick break to our dynamic ads.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight. Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Yeah, well, they would even hunt humans if you're a midget, then they would definitely come for you.
Well, children, you know what I mean? It's an issue for children. Yeah, who live in those areas, you definitely need to keep an eye on your children for sure. Because yeah,
exactly. So in Lille, he took that as his symbol, and all of the warring mostly came out of that consciousness. Now, I don't know why that is the way it is, but it's just the way it is, where the serpent was always trying to be the enlightener, giver of consciousness, and the eagle was always the more warring type and masculine energy, and then the serpent was more like feminine energy, which is why it was more for love and compassion and kindness and stuff. And when you go through antiquity, it always had seemed to be this battle between the two types of consciousness. And this is very well encapsulated in the Mexican peso. And if anyone looks at the Mexican peso, you will see that there's an eagle and with a serpent in its mouth and also in its paw. And then this is actually an allegory for the eagle consciousness dominating and overtaking and becoming the dominant power on Earth. And when you look at the countries that have eagle symbology, United States, Egypt, Iraq, Yemen, Indonesia, Syria, you know, Montenegro, Austria, Moldova, Armenia, all of these are countries that are very warring countries, you know? And so you find that it's always been this. I don't want to necessarily call it good versus evil because it's much deeper than that. But you find that even in the Enki faction, they still wanted to have total domination. And the main protagonist for that was Marduk. He's the one that is really the one that is the most heinous. He's the one that likes child sacrifice, pedophilia, child sex trafficking. Abortions are basically to him because he was also known as Moloch. And Moloch used to sacrifice your children to him. So this is why, and you find that when he came to Mesoamerica, he changed his name. I try to remember which it was called, Huitzilopochtli or something like that. And he was the sun god for the Aztecs. Because it's mad, because I'm reading the Papal Vuh right now. And in the beginning, the Maya were, you know, very loving and peaceful type people. And then there just seems to be a bit of a shift where they're just sacrificing people, taking out their hearts and cutting off people's heads and playing football with their heads and all kind of stuff. And it looks very much like this was the influence of Marduk, who for the Aztecs would be Huitzilopochtli. Yeah, always very difficult to pronounce that name. And this is where you see a lot of sort of like warring going on, because that is the consciousness now that has taken over the planet. And this is where we have all these wars. We have very much strife. You have a lot of famines. You have a lot of suffering, because what it looks like is that the energy that controls this matrix appears to feed off of negative emotions, excuse me, and human suffering. And this is why it's continually a present thing in our lifetime. Because I can never remember when there was never some sort of war going on Earth between two countries or two factions or a civil war or something. There always is war. And the reason for that is that when you have war, it means then that you can have all of this negative energy that's continually to feed the consciousness on Earth. So we think that it is normal. And the first thing that we all want to do is fight. But what that does is that just causes separation between us. So this is why you know that they don't necessarily even have to fight so much physically. All you need to do is create genders. All you need to do is have right wing, left wing. You only need to condemn man versus woman. You know, you have rich versus poor, right? It's all these duality systems that they created that what keep us mentally enslaved and separated. Because what we have now is a mad phenomenon where we spend more time fighting against each other than realizing that we are actually being enslaved collectively. And what people don't realize is that these people are so powerful that they caused the whole planet to shut down 4 years ago, right? Off of what? Off of a light. And that just shows you the amount of fear and sort of coercion and brainwashing that has been done to humans. And I recently interviewed a guy called Jason Christoph, and he was saying that all of this is planned out years and years in advance, where from 2011, they produced over 300 movies or shows in order to sow in consciousness of man about a pandemic and wearing masks and all that kind of stuff. He says over 300. So we're dealing with very, very sophisticated beings and a very, very, very clever system that's been put together in order to keep humans fighting against themselves, not unifying, and being distracted from the fact that we're being all enslaved, right? Now we even have to worry about what we say now, where the Stasi is going to soon come for us. Because in Europe, you literally say anything that the state doesn't like, they're coming for you, literally, and putting you in prison for up to 2 years and stuff, right? So all I would say is that if people think that is not going to turn up at their doorstep, then I would say think again, because the whole world is a stage and men are just mere players.
Well said, yeah. Now, I want to ask you maybe slightly out of this topic and into another one, but connected to the serpent, you know, with the Garden of Eden story, we have this serpent, this connotation of, you know, knowledge through ingesting a substance, right? In this case, the substance is an apple. All sorts of interpretations on what this could possibly mean. You know, an apple might not necessarily mean an apple. It might not even necessarily mean food at all. There are certain authors who have made the theory that it was, or posed the theory that it was some sort of psychedelic drug. We see the Eleusinian mystery schools using serpent iconography in conjunction with the ingestion of psychedelic substances, in this case, you know, a concoction of different substances. But what are your thoughts on that? I know mushrooms is a big part of what you advocate for and what you research. So where do psychedelics fit into this realm? Were these created for a certain purpose? Were they kept away from humans for a certain purpose? Or the inverse, are they being given to humans for a certain purpose? I mean, where do psychedelics fit into this whole equation? Because some people, you know, seem to think that they just kind of popped up out of nowhere. But there is a tremendous amount of, you know, resources in the form of ancient accounts of drug use. It's not like a modern thing. This is a very, you know, old thing, doing, you know, using drugs of different kinds. So what do you think about this? How do we connect those two topics?
What I would say is that you're correct, where the Essenians, they seem to have had some sort of psychedelic potion or concoction that they would use. Even there was a mummy that was found that had traces of cocaine in Egypt. So you're correct, we're using substances, psychedelic substances are not something new. Now, with that being said, from talking to my shaman, he said that the indigenous people in South America, the tribe he's talking about, the Shibo people, they said that the plants, the trees, just told them. It just spoke to them, right? And told them, this is what you're doing, you prepare it. And obviously that's a myth, and that's according to their traditions. So we have no proof to verify, and that's 100% it is, because what I would say to people is that in this genre of information, some of it is speculative, some of it is certain, some of it we just don't know. And for those people that are looking for 100% black and white facts, in this genre of information, myth, reality, and facts, the lines between all three tend to blur a bit. So those people that are wanting concrete facts, you wouldn't be able to find them necessarily here, because we were not there, right? So with that being said, because we have certain receptors in our brain for even, say, cannabis, DMT, psilocybin, and even in things like, you know, San Pedro and Peyote, etc. I am very inclined to say that those things were put on Earth to help us to get back to source. Because if they were not there, it means then that we wouldn't be able to have these psychedelic experiences to understand things of higher level of consciousness. And I would say is that those things, in fact, when you talk to shaman and stuff, they never really, they always refer to the term as medicine. And when you're sick, you take medicine. So if you have a cold, you probably drink some honey, lemon, turmeric, black pepper, lime, and hot water, right? So that's a medicine to cure for if you have a cold. But if you have like a sickness in your mind or how you feel inside of you, you know, you need to have a medicine to take for that. And because we're dealing with things of the mind, you need to have things that push past your consciousness or your conscious mind and access the subconscious mind. Because the subconscious mind is also known as the mind of God. So when you take these substances that can penetrate your subconscious mind and you can actually get access to see what is in there, it becomes very powerful. And it becomes very powerful for the individual because they can actually start to see patterns. They can actually start to see their behaviors. They can start to understand themselves. Now, if 60% of all humans were to do that, the system would actually break because humans would stop paying taxes, stop going to work, and they would start coming together and working together as communities, right? Because the whole idea of a central government is actually flawed and it can't really work because it is too much of a behemoth to have a real impact into areas where people that are in that area can manage and steer and improve. So what you have now is that psychedelics have been suppressed and spoken about really badly because you don't want a populace that questions things. You want a populace that is going to go to school and study to go and get a nice, secure job, to work 40 hours a day a week, then to work for 40 years of their life to retire for 40% of their salary. 40-40-40 rule. The system is designed to do that. So even things like cannabis, where if you ingest it while smoking or eating or drinking, you will have an experience where you will start to think about things differently. Now, that now will cause you to analyze your life and yourself to realize, well, why is this thing always occurring? But they don't really want that. They want a populace that, as J.P. Morgan said, are just workers, worker bees. You go to we have cubicles now, so instead of going to the factory, and you go to your cubicle like a farm animal, and you go in your Ferris wheel and you run in there as fast as you can. You're not going anywhere, but you keep running. Then it's time for you to go home, and then what do? You go and get stuck in front of the TV or the tablet or the smartphone, and you're not really improving yourself. So psychedelics now breaks that paradigm that you're in. So I'm very inclined to say that the ancients were big users of psychedelics. Circumstantially evident, that's circumstantial evidence. We don't have 100% proof, but we have found traces of DMT and that plant, I think it's called the Icara plant tree?
Acadia is a national park. I'm thinking of acacia. It's the acacia tree.
That's it. Acacia.
Yes.
I always mix
it up. No, it has a high level of DMT and, you know, this is kind of underground black market stuff, but yeah, people will buy big bags of that tree leaf offline and then you can, you know, through a certain process get DMT as a result. And DMT, as a matter of fact, you know, you don't even have to go that far because it's endogenous to so many plants at various levels, certain plants higher than others. The acacia plant happens to be probably one of the higher percentages, which is why historically it's associated with visionary sorts of legends or stories. And I think some people have posed the theory, and I hope I'm not getting ahead of you here, but that Moses, you know, was burning the acacia bush, not just any old burning bush.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. and busy thing, like I say to people, a lot of the stuff that is in this genre of information is reality mixing with myth and legend, and the lines blur a lot. So,
yeah.
You know, you have to accept that, because like truth seekers that are like black and white and journalist type people, it's going to be hard to understand and to conceptualize a lot of these things for that simple reason, because we weren't there. So we have no way to verify 100%. But the stuff that we, as in the public domain, and things that I share make a lot more sense than what we've been told. So again, back to what I was saying about the psychedelics, because we have receptors in our brains for those, it means then that those plants were made for us to use. Because if we didn't have receptors in our brains, then basically you could just drink it like a normal tea and nothing would happen to you and it'd be all fine and good. The mere fact that we have the receptors to be able to process the molecules to have these experiences confirms that they're there for us to help us on our journey. Because what it appears, and I mean, if you follow the work of Dolores Cannon, according to her, on a higher level, we all decided to come back here because we wanted to have this physical experience, to play, to have fun, experience, excuse me, all of the emotions. Excuse me, and then when you finish, you go back. And then if then you get a little bit stuck, you will have like the psychedelics to put you back on your course. And then when it's time for you to go to say, okay, Mark, see you, man. I'm going back upstairs. Come and check me when you're finished. And you're like, okay, Todd, cool, man. Have a good trip. And then you will just pass away. Or maybe you just like some of the yogis, they just leave their body and leave the body there and their spirit goes, you know. So who knows, right? But the mere fact that we are able to synthesize those molecules is a very strong inclination that that is the reason why they're here. They're here to help us. And like in terms of like mushrooms, you have things called golden key teachers, and they're there to teach you, right? Because all of the medicines teach you something, but you have to break the paradigm that you're in, your reality, in order for you to be able to realize, hold on a minute, you know, this is a repeat body here. Okay, maybe I need some help here. Maybe, you know what, I need a bit of a coach to help me to improve in my business or my fitness, or if I want to be a public speaker, to, you know, how to have proper diction and to project my voice, whatever it is, the medicines are there to teach us all of these things, right? And the mere fact that they're talked about so badly, suppressed, made illegal in some states, is a confirmation that they don't want us to start to awaken. Because if you awaken the population, the system is going to die and the system needs slaves. So in order to keep the slave system going, you have to take away the things and the tools that would help them. It's just like when you first enslave a people, the first thing you do is you stop them from reading. Why is that? Because if you read books, you start to realize, hold on a minute, you can trap my body, but you can't trap my mind. So by doing that, taking away the books and burning books, they're like, no, we're going to try to trap your mind, right? And this is one of the allegories you have, where even when Yeshua was on the cross and being crucified, you had the crown of thorns. And the allegory for that is that the crown of thorns was to try to trap his mind. They were trying to put his mind in a box. So they're like, well, you say you're king, we're going to put this crown on you And we're going to, because obviously the crown chakra connects you to source. So we're going to put this crown on you and flip pain on you to put you in this box. So this is why, if you think about it, look at a lot of religions. Sikhs, they wear a headdress. And the headdress, again, traps your mind. It basically puts your mind in a box. Jews wear a yarmulke. Muslims wear a turban, right? The Pope, he wears a hat as well, right? Then
the mitre.
You mitre, okay. Then look at the nuns. They wear a headdress. Look at Islamic women. They wear a hijab, right? All of these are symbols, right? For trying to trap your mind, right? It's all about mind control. And these not so benevolent beings figured out a long time ago that the best thing to do is to trap the mind, because trapping the body, as in having like straight up face mask off slavery, it only works for a time. But because they're more than them, a day will come where the people may just get so fed up and start policing each other that they turn on them. So what they did is they used trickery and guile. So they incentivized some people to be policemen of others. So that's why you have like snitches. Because think about it, during the whole pandemic lockdown scenario, the government was paying people to snitch on their neighbors, right? So you have a system now where you have the mind control has many different levels. So you're controlling the masses through religion, through government, and through media. Then on the lower level, you have the mind control of the policemen that are policing their fellow humans. And then under that now, you have the people that are so stuck in fear, and they will just follow because they're afraid of the consequences. So the entire brainwashing campaign has been done so well that you can never have humans having access to psychedelics. You don't want them doing magic mushrooms, UFO, ayahuasca, peyote. Hell no. If you get, I maintain, if you get 60% of the population to do ayahuasca or any form of psychedelic, this planet would change. And then to make, if you want to up the ante, anybody that wants to serve in government has to go and spend months in the jungle in Mexico or Peru doing ayahuasca, and then they'll be fit to serve. Because I don't think that you can go and spend loads and loads of time in the jungle or doing ayahuasca and you want to be a tyrant. I think it's quite unlikely. Is it still possible? Absolutely. I think it's more unlikely that that would happen, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any debating that. But it is a little concerning from one perspective because, you know, and I wouldn't say this about something like cannabis or mushrooms. Obviously, you know, maybe certain people with prior conditions possibly, I don't know, maybe like a predisposure for schizophrenia, if that's even what they tell us it is. I have doubts about that. But I wonder, you know, how much caution you have about something like this. And again, I make the clarification that I'm not really concerned as much about cannabis. Mushrooms, I mean, to a certain extent, but really, based on my own experience, I would say, yeah, I can't see how this would happen. Again, maybe the right person who's had certain trauma or however. But with ayahuasca, it takes you out of your body. It takes you into this sort of astral world almost. And this has been described by, you know, dozens of people now. But initially, it was described by Michael Harner and a few other anthropologists who ventured out into the Amazon rainforest to do ayahuasca. And Michael Harner's ayahuasca experience, being one of the first, you know, English speakers to record their experience on this drug, he described something like Egyptian boat coming and taking him, and animal, half human, half animal figures, you know, being there on the boat. And it was a very interesting kind of journey he went down. And his takeaway was, well, because I'm not, you know, Hivero Indian, I don't have a, you know, a concept of their gods and their pantheon and their worldview. So ayahuasca gave me an experience that was, you know, maybe out of my Western mythos, the, you know, the archetype of what my soul is. Deep in there, there's this story that connects all the way back to Greece and Egypt and Rome, or however he rationalized it as a sort of materialistic anthropologist. I don't know, maybe his thoughts changed. He wrote several other books afterwards that I haven't read, unfortunately. But The Way of the Shaman kind of spells that out. And I'm curious, like, do you think that these ancient beings, you know, present in a sort of disincarnate form, the way we're told, the Nephilim and these beings, the fallen angels, they sort of exist on the planet in this disembodied form. Is this the realm where they can interact with us? This realm that we reach when we're on psychedelics? And should that, you know, be a sort of reason for caution when taking these sorts of psychedelics? I mean, do you think there's any sorts of dangers there, or is it purely a inner transcendence, a sort of inner transcendent sort of evolution? Sounds like what a lot of people assume it is, and I don't find any problems with that. But I also wonder, like, again, should we have some caution about interacting with these otherworldly beings?
Obviously,
I think you should have some caution. If I can remember exactly what my shaman said to me, he says, when you're going to the spirit realm, all you're doing is you're going to the spiritual town square. And he says, in a normal town square, you will find good people and you will find bad people. So with that being said, in the spiritual town square, you will find good entities and negative entities. What that means then is that you have to be cautious on who you want to hang around with. You know, in the real world, who you want to do business with, who will be your friends, right? So what it is now is that when you're going to do psychedelics, especially things like ayahuasca, I mean, with magic mushrooms, even bufo, you can, to some degree, do it on your own, but I always recommend having a shaman to help you. And the reason is that the shaman are sort of like your guides. So it's just like, if you're going to a foreign country, you know, if you have a friend that speaks the language, lives there, you know, they can actually say, hey, Mark, well, this place over here has the best fruits and vegetables in town. And if you go over here, you can get the cheapest meat and fish you want. And you go over there and you can, you know, get like alkaline water or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Just create a situation here. It's the same thing in the spirit realm. So the shaman now will guide and navigate you through it through certain protocols. So for example, what they would do is that they would clean the air of the circle of negative energy. They will ask permission from the beings of light to open the portals, and they come with an intention to help the people while they're there, right? So that they're asking permission from the higher level beings to say, hey, look, we come here with respect and love, and we want to do some work here, help overcome some fears and traumas and repair broken hearts, etc., etc. And by doing certain protocols, then you increase your chances exponentially that you will get a good trip on the medicine, right? So you have shaman now that will come and guide you. And if now you are having a difficult journey, you know, when you're under the influence of the psychedelics, they can, in the sense of like ayahuasca, the shaman can sing certain types of Icarus to help now to calm you. And they can actually also come next to you and be a presence to help reassure you, They can also go in and help you, guide you spiritually, because they also drink. But they drink a lower dosage. But what that does, though, that allows them to be in the spirit world, but still be able to work with you.
And I encourage anyone listening who's curious about psychedelics to reach out to you, because obviously you not only help coach people through fitness and health journeys, but spiritual wellness journeys as well, which I think psychedelics are a great tool for, especially with the right, you know, the right people to help facilitate it, because there definitely is. And, you know, we don't need to spend any time talking about it because we have covered it in past episodes. But there's a side to the psychedelic world that is a little bit exploitative, you know, these kind of ayahuasca camps and whatnot, you know. So you definitely don't want to just approach this blindly. You know, reach out to Todd, get in touch with him. And as we start to wrap this up, any final thoughts, places where people can go to contact you directly, or the best place to do that? And then obviously the Conscious Man 7, the number 7, not the whole word 7, is your podcast, and they can also search you on social media there as well, right?
Yes. So what I would like to say in closing is that we have a fantastic opportunity right now on the planet to actually level up ourselves to become the God-man, right? And when I say the God-man, I mean man collectively, because man is a collective word. We have a fantastic opportunity to be the God-man. And the God-man is basically what Christ, Yeshua was, what Thor was, Krishna, Buddha. These were like God-men, because they were able to maintain that realization and understanding of who they are and what they are full time. So like when you do meditation, you have like little minutes and sections where you feel the energy inside of you. You have like this outer body experience and you're like, wow. But they were able to maintain that frame for the rest of their existence on the planet. And we have a fantastic opportunity to do that. However, it is a situation where it requires you having to do some work and some sacrifice. And my take on it is that we go through the body. Everything starts with the body. You're not going to be able to get a high level of consciousness, live a life of love, happiness, and abundance if you're fat, overweight, sloppy, you have no self-esteem and no self-confidence. So you need to start with your body and to get into shape. So if you're interested in actually taking your life to another level and learning some of the things that I talk about, you want to learn how to cook, how to train, and also some of the spiritual sides of things, because all of these are things that are my coaching. Hit me up on my Instagram at Adriano_246 or my name, Todd Cades. Send me a DM. Say, hey, Todd, heard you on Mark. I really want to get into shape. Can you help me? Something like that. Because one of the things that I see is that some people that reach out to me, they only say that they want to do it, but they're not really serious. I think that comes from a place of fear, because when you realize that, hey, I actually have to change my habits, I need to change my routine, I need to change my life, that becomes scary. But I'm going to tell you something that I have learned through my personal journey. What you resist persists. Overanalysis leads to paralysis. So even if you are not sure that you can do it, say yes and do it anyway. This is one of the best tips of advice I can give to people. If an opportunity comes to you and you're not sure you can do it and you want to do it, say yes and learn how to do it. Even if you don't have money at the time, say yes and do it. You know why? Because you will find a way. Because the universe rewards bravery. The universe rewards those who take risks to improve themselves. And there's this thing called magic that will just happen. You may just get a promotion. Someone may have owed you money, and you may get it. And like, oh my gosh, you know what? I can deal with Todd. So hit me up if you're really serious about taking your life to the next level, because I'm on a mission to help improve and help as many people as I can, because we need people that are in shape. We need people that are reading books. We need people that are doing psychedelics. And we need people out there who are not afraid to say no to the oppression that's coming. Because please believe me, what is coming is going to be far worse than what we saw during the pandemic. And they're coming for every one of us. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Indian, Sikh, Jew, Muslim. They're coming for all of us. And the only way to push back is to work on yourself. And you first start with your body. Now, if you are already working on your body and you would like to level up spiritually, hit me up. I can help you get some magic mushrooms. I can help you to overcome some fears and troubles. And I would tell you exactly how to do the mushrooms, whether you want to do microdosing or you want to do a hero's dose. Either way, you will get a benefit something. And then also, if you like content like this, you can find me on the Conscious Man 7, available on most platforms. It's very easy to find me on Spreaker, and that's the app that I use mostly. Conscious Man 7, we have some really good guests. I would say that if you follow me, I'm going to give you all a bit of an intel drop here. I interviewed my shaman yesterday, who I'm going to see, and that episode will be out. I'm going to push to do it next week, Friday, because I have another episode to bring out before then. And then because I'm away this weekend doing ayahuasca, there will be no episode dropping this weekend. So all those that follow me that listen to your show, you only get one show this week, but next week you'll have the other one, and then the Friday, it should be the one with my shaman. Great conversation.
Right on.
Yes. So, and then also, if you want to help support the podcast, want some cool merch like what we've got here, you know, hit me up. Go to my Amazon store, Todd and Me, and you can find some cool designs. And we got ourselves some new headphones. So these are people that supported podcasts, and, you know, bit by bit, we're leveling up and improving. And then soon we have a mixer like Mark. So all y'all that help support the channel, we can make some upgrades like that. And lastly, I want to say, Mark, thank you very much for having me on the show. It was a very different type of conversation, but also very, very good. I think it's a conversation that we needed to have. I didn't expect to talk about psychedelics, but, you know, all I would say is that it's just a divine timing that I'm actually going to do ayahuasca in 2 days. And we did the show because we were trying to do this show for like a couple of weeks now, right? And we just couldn't get it done. But I think that everything happens in divine timing. So
right.
I'm very happy to come back again. And definitely I will come back again and we can talk about that experience and what I've learned and seen. And yeah, just thanks to all your supporters that have shown me a lot of love, because you've got a great set of supporters. So much love to all of you guys that have been listening to the shows and hitting me up and getting magic mushrooms and starting to train with me. I love you all. Thank you very much. And from the bottom of my heart, I just say I'm going to keep doing my best to keep putting out fire content and helping people touch, move, and inspire people in order to become the best version of themselves. So again, hit me up at Adriano_246 or my name, Todd Cave. The Conscious Man 7 and the Amazon store, Todd and Me, for all your merch and stuff.
Right on. Well, well said, Todd. Thank you again for joining me, and we'll talk again soon. But until then, folks, we'll catch you next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. Right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our interview with Todd Cave. Of course, if you want the full interview and every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast in its entirety, ad-free and interruption-free, sign up on the Patreon or the Substack to get the full episode and every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast in a premium RSS feed that you can use wherever you already listen to the show, so you don't even have to change up your routine.
Conscious Man 7 is Todd's podcast. Go and check it out. I'm going to keep this outro really short and sweet because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I got a little too crazy this past weekend. I hung out with some of my oldest friends, some of my best friends. Shout out to John, such a good dude. His cousin had a birthday and we were all hanging out, getting rowdy, watching the UFC fights. And good old Danny boy challenged me to a boxing match. I am not one to be called out and made a fool of in those situations. But, you know, I kind of regret it in hindsight because this is my bread and butter, folks, talking and thinking and asking questions and now, you know, making music for every intro. And I gotta say, I've been a little dull over the past few days. I need to sharpen my steel because I took a few hits in that boxing match. And yeah, I don't know, maybe a minor concussion, maybe a light concussion. I've been feeling a little foggy the past few days. But I will say, round one of that boxing match is on my Instagram. Unfortunately, nobody filmed round two where I got clobbered pretty hard. But I did the clobbering in round one. So if you want to see an impressive demonstration of my martial arts skills, go and check it out on my Instagram. It's really not much to brag about. Anybody who knows anything about martial arts will quickly tell anyone that I was not even holding my hands up high. I was punching from my shoulders, which is really not, that's not how you're supposed to be punching. You're supposed to punch from your jaw and keep your hands at eye level to keep your head protected. So I did not do that. I threw caution to the wind, and because of that, I took a few shots. So after reviewing the tape, I was like, oh, geez, I really got rusty after a few years, but it's nice to know that I still got it in some way, and I promise I won't be boxing much more after that because I got to focus on the podcast, and I cannot be risking my mind, putting my brain in jeopardy like that. So go and check out the Instagram reel while it's still up. Follow me at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy on Instagram to see my quick little boxing debut there. Nothing to shake a stick at, but it was pretty fun, I will say. But with that, folks, I'm going to wrap this one up, come to a close here, and we'll be back very soon this week with another episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
Broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki. Stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception. Tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it, and the system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling through the library of the Vatican. On a sacred journey, I embark with the squad. Forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My getaway, I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, robbing for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-35s. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out.
Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.